Hello and welcome along to the Anxiety Specialist podcast. I'm your host, Michael Burrows.
And I'm Becky Burrows.
If you've been struggling with anxiety or know someone who has been, then this podcast is for you.
Today, we're going to be covering some more tips, strategies, and insights so you can get the anxiety-free life you deserve.
Ready? Let's dive in.
If listening to the podcast, you realize that you really want to work on some of your own anxiety, that it's become an issue in your life, it's affecting your functioning, then I would really encourage you to jump on my masterclass on how to reduce your anxiety. This is the best place to start. I cover what the journey looks like, how moving through anxiety works, and the mistakes people make that really hold them back. So click the link in the show notes to be able to come and join me on that masterclass. And I'm really excited to help you to start overcoming your own anxiety.
So if you've got anxiety, the last thing you need is everyone piling their anxiety on top of your own. So I heard this really cool quote on Brené Brown podcast with Emmanuel Achot, and he said, we have to stop being afraid of other people's fears. And when he said that, I was like, stop, rerun, write that down. We need to do an episode about this because this is such a good statement. It's like, yes, we need to identify when we're in a situation where other people's fears are actually impacting on us and it's not our own anxiety, it's somebody else's. We need to be able to identify when that happens, and we need to know what to do when that does happen. Because the last thing we need is to be continually having more and more anxieties piled on top of us to the point where our life is restricted and non-functional. And people can do that, and they can squash dreams when they throw anxiety water on your, you know, your hopes and dreams. And so it's really important to be able to recognize that. And so that's what we're going to have a bit of conversation today about. And Michael's joining me today, which is really cool. Yeah, let's jump into it. So when are some situations, we're going to talk about some situations where you might experience someone else's anxiety being projected onto you. I find myself as a mum that my parenting is a source of anxiety projection for other people. When I choose to do things differently, then the amount of people who will get scared by that and then want to share their concerns about my parenting style can be quite difficult. And because I guess I have chosen how I want to parent, but you know, it's still hard sometimes to kind of wrestle with, am I being a good parent?
Yeah.
And so
it doesn't help that it's in the top two shame triggers for women.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so when that shame pops up mixed with somebody else's projected anxiety, it can make me doubt the decisions that I'm making and we're making about.
Yeah. And that's actually an interesting point that I need to disclaimer in with this conversation here is that if anyone's heard the episode about anxiety and whether it's contagious, stress is, as in, say, your boss is really stressed and he's like grumping around the place or something, and you could get stressed as a result of that, or if there's something stressful around, we can feel stressed there. The difference is then when we go away from that stress, or we're then able to calm our nervous system back down. Anxiety isn't contagious in the sense of if we don't have that kind of anxiety, we don't have an anxiety about that topic, then it won't pass back on without our own beliefs being able to be ramped up off it. But if we do have existing anxiety about it, then someone talking about it, someone launching into that conversation, throwing in some fears, can kick it off. It can trigger it if we have that existing anxiety. So in this case, if you have some fears about your parenting not being good enough or something, which a lot of people have, then someone making some comments or some constructive criticism or sharing some fears of their own can then kick ours off.
Absolutely. I think especially when they decide to throw in some fearful projection.
Projection, yeah.
Projections. It's those mystical ball, I can see the future and predict what's going to happen, the horrible, terrible, scary thing that's going to happen. And they say it as if it's fact.
Yeah, that's the tricky thing. It's hard to spot, yeah.
It's really frustrating. It's like, oh, if you do that, you'll lose all your money and you'll go bankrupt. Or, no, if you do that, your child will not develop properly and then they'll fall behind in school and then that will be terrible. Then they won't get a good job and their life will be ruined. It's just like, how do you know that? You can't see the future. And that's one of the things that can happen when someone's projecting their fears onto you, is them stating what could happen that they're scared of happening as if it's definite, it's going to happen.
I mean, you can even have your feelings be projected onto you. So the example of mine that I get a lot is when people see my Velomobile that I'll ride to work on. For those of you who don't know, that's a recumbent bike with a shell around it, weatherproofing, which is really awesome. You can ride in all weathers, pretty cool. But because of the recumbent style, that makes it lower to the ground. And people look at it and they go, aren't you terrified riding in that? I'm just like, well, no, actually. I've been hit by a bus on a normal bike, but not on this one. No trouble whatsoever with traffic in this one. But people look at it and they go, people won't be able to see you and they're going to run you over. Yeah. And it's like, wow, it's actually about the same height as some sports cars. You can see those. Or my favorite, now that I've thought about it a bit more, is, wait. You can see road markings, like road markings painted onto the road. So like you can see that low. So as long as I'm out in front, people can see me. And then you just be wary of course, utes that are parked on diagonal parks and that kind of thing. But they can't see you on your regular bike or your car anyway. So they're to be wary of regardless. But yes, I haven't had any trouble on that. But I have a lot of people projecting that prediction that I won't be seen, get run over, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's the reasons why they don't put themselves out there in that way.
Yes.
Why they won't bike to work is because if they see it as they're so scared of it and dangerous, but then they project that onto somebody else who is doing it.
Mm. And it could shrink my life down potentially, you know, if I took that on board.
Absolutely. Mm. I think one thing to be aware of with this is these conversations, they can happen with people who are close to you. Family, definitely not immune from family members saying these sort of things. And we were talking about it before, and Michael, you said something really interesting about why they might be projecting fears onto you.
Because they care, right? So we tend to care more about family members or close friends, right? But that means that our own anxieties can extend out to them a bit more, right? We obviously care about ourselves, but we also care about people that we care about, people that are close to us. And if we have certain negative predictions about bad things happening, then we would extend that to them and we would care enough about them that we share that to try and protect them, just like our anxiety tries to protect us. And then voila, we're in a conversation where we're catastrophizing for their lives.
Yeah. And I think where the person who's doing it is trying to keep you safe, projecting anxiety doesn't help people live their best lives. Mm. Thinking about all the worst things that can happen.
Well, think about what anxiety is, right? We're not talking about a realistic threat prediction here. Mm. Anxiety is when there's an overestimation of threat and then all this adrenaline that isn't actually useful.
Yeah. And I think those situations where someone is just predicting a potential future that is in no way guaranteed and stating it like it's fact and that's definitely going to happen and you're in danger, that's creating, especially if it's about something you really want to do, something that's important to you, pouring that sort of anxiety on top of you, if you take it on, is going to impact on your functioning, your ability to function in your best life the way you want to be able to. And so it is problematic. And that's why I think it's really important with these sort of conversations to be able to identify when it's happening. So I guess the first thing is identifying your own anxiety. When you are anxious and when this is your anxiety and when it's somebody else's. So how can someone get a bit more of awareness of their own anxiety? What is anxiety? What is valid concern? What is actual legitimate threat management? What's the difference between anxiety and that?
Well, there's some that can be fairly close to the gray area between a real threat and a catastrophization, right? But that would tend to cause a rather small amount of anxiety. When we've got lots of anxiety, it tends to be a massive overestimation of threat. And so that's a bit more easily discernible if we take a bit of time to think about it or maybe have a bit of a work through what we would call a cognitive challenge, where you identify, you know, how you're feeling, how strongly are we feeling it, what's the prediction? And then working through that prediction, asking a number of some good prefrontal cortex involving questions and having a bit more of a think through it, perhaps realizing that it isn't very realistic, or sometimes even it can be somewhat realistic, but still be unhelpful. When we ask ourselves the question of what are the benefits of predicting this negative, right? And then going, and what are the costs of predicting this negative, right? What's it costing me? Or I guess if we're talking about projecting onto other people, what could it cost them? And often that way up can end up with the benefits being smaller than the costs, which is what we call in unhelpful thought or projection.
So I think it's really helpful if you're having a conversation with someone to be aware of when your anxiety pops up. Your care and concern moves from care and concern into unhelpful anxiety that might limit their life. And that it's maybe a place to step back and calm yourself rather than project your negative projections onto somebody else. And then with acknowledging this anxiety and what Michael's been talking about in terms of the cognitive challenges, I just want to quickly pop in this point because I think it's relevant, that if you want help to be able to do cognitive challenges, if you want to be able to identify your anxiety, what's causing it, what's maintaining it, that side of things, and work through it, then we actually do have a program that you can join. So get in contact with us to work with us further because we would love to help you. And when you get more of that anxiety awareness, you can improve your own life, but it also helps you not to project that anxiety onto other people and cause more issues in their lives. So it's beneficial all around to work on your anxiety. So once you've figured out what's your anxiety, you've taken ownership for that, you're not projecting that into conversations, or at least when you are, you may be acknowledging it and going, oh, actually, this is maybe my own anxiety and I'm making these fearful predictions, but that's not necessarily going to happen type thing. Owning it. Once you've done that, now we're kind of thinking, what are some signals that somebody else is projecting their anxiety? What are some indications that this is more than just, you know, a conversation, this is actually anxiety projection? I think for me, one of the things to be aware of is people can mistake their anxiety for concern. They go, I'm not anxious about this. I'm just concerned for you.
Yeah, that's a common one. Yeah.
That's something that it feels sneaky because they're very adamant that they're not anxious about it. Very adamant. Or, you know, this isn't anxiety. This is going to happen. This is just, you know, this is completely valid. I guess
they're well into the anxiety unawareness stage.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess other things are if they are getting, they're in that fight and flight mode as well. Because when you're feeling anxious, then it's about either attacking something, you know, or running away. So trying to convince you to get out.
Well, the attacking is actually attacking anything that is preventing, anything that's acting as an obstacle to escaping the threat, right? Which can become you in that conversation.
Oh, that sucks. Yes, absolutely. So you can be having a conversation and sharing something that you're going to be doing. And the other person shows some concern that they don't think you should be doing that. And then you're like, no, no, I'm going to be doing this anyway. And then they're like, oh, you're the threat to you now.
I will now attack you until you are safe.
I'm going to attack you to make you safe. Yeah, which is another thing that can come up in these type of conversations. And I think it's good to be aware of what's happening and why it's happening, but then finding a way to maybe wrap up that conversation because that doesn't sound like helpful. Place to be.
I think noticing your feelings is another way to become aware of it. If you suddenly notice that you're feeling anxious in the conversation, you might give it a brief ponder as to when that happened. Because why is often a difficult question, right? So you want to ask what or where, right? Or the where could be a when, I suppose. Those W questions, rather than the why, which is also a W. Forget that. What or when will work, because then you're like, when in the conversation did that pop up? Or you could ask, what's making me anxious? Whichever one of those, you know, elicits an answer easiest. And then you'll be like, wait, okay, it was something they said, right? And then that'll give you a little hint, maybe it's something that they injected in there.
I'm just thinking about myself for a second because I can project anxiety like a mother. When I'm anxious and I don't want something to happen, I'm a force to be reckoned with.
Are you saying you're not a force to be reckoned with the rest of the time? It's just a force for good the rest of the time.
Yeah, but my gosh. And I'm really impressed with Michael, actually. You're one of the few people who will not back out of something when I start getting anxious about it.
When there's something I really want.
Yeah, because I can get really scared and then I know one of my unhelpful habits that I developed was to get really scared about something and then to try to get other people to rescue me from it or to end the thing that I'm scared of. One of the situations I remember as a child was my parents wanting to go somewhere and there was a non-trespassing sign. And I'm pretty sure my dad actually had permission to go there, but I saw that
there was a sign.
Do not trespass sign. Or you'll be prosecuted. And I just was in my little brain, my child brain was like, my parents are going to go to prison. And I just lost the plot.
Well, once that's a definite, then you can activate fight or flight.
Yeah. So I was desperate for my parents not to go in there.
And not to go to prison.
And not to go to prison. And so it's been interesting in our relationship with someone who, being me, who does that, for you to sort of stand your ground in terms of the situation. But I find one of the things is we're getting better at not making any of those sort of real big change decisions, especially about getting out of something, when I'm in that high anxious state, which I hate, because when I'm in high anxious state, I just want us to get rid of the thing that I'm scared of.
Yes. What it requires, what that needs to be able to carry that out is you need the belief that feelings won't hurt you. Otherwise, you've got to rescue the person from their feelings because they're really escalated and they're going to hurt them terribly if you hold that belief that emotions can be dangerous.
And Michael does not hold that belief. Your feelings won't hurt you. I'm going to let you sit with this.
Wow. Emotions are like a fine wine, except they actually taste good. You can savor them, right? Even like sadness or like, you know, grief or those kinds of ones. You can be like, oh yes, it's got kind of a hint of that and over in my chest area and a bit of a sunken feeling in my stomach. Yes, yes, you can really get the taste of that.
Oh, dear love.
They're not things to be feared.
You just have a really interesting approach to emotions, which I've always found fascinating. But yeah, that is really like, if you're going, what the heck, that is how Michael approaches emotions. But it's helpful. It's a curiosity, I guess.
Yes, it's partly because in the Myers-Briggs, I'm an INTJ, which gets very curious about a whole range of things, including emotions. Yeah. Oh, what are these emotion things?
Things that people feel. Yeah, I think also you don't seem to experience them quite as intensely as well. Not many people feel emotions as intensely alike.
Think about what intensifies emotions, right? You got two things.
Fear of emotions probably does that.
Well, secondary emotions, which can be fear. So you got secondary emotions where you go, you might have fear about the first emotion you felt, or you might be angry about the first emotion you had, or ashamed about the first emotion you had, or disgusted with the first emotion you had. And then the other is trauma.
It's where curiosity is really interesting and helpful, because instead of piling a different emotion for feeling that emotion, shame, guilt, whatever, you're actually just applying curiosity.
It's a great antidote.
Which then, that's really cool. I really like that. So knowing that it's safe for people to feel, it's okay for people to feel their emotions. The other side of things is being able to, so I'm just trying to think how that works both ways. So you've got the person who is projecting their emotions. No, the person who's feeling the emotions, the other person wanting to take away those emotions. But also, as a person feeling hard emotions, it's important to know that you can cope with that, that you can survive. And trusting yourself that I can feel this feeling and I will be okay. I'm not okay right now, but I will be okay.
Yeah, so you start by challenging that logically to help yourself get through that first round. And then if you do that first round, you manage to cut out those safety behaviors, then you get the experience of it having been safe.
Yeah.
And then you feel more comfortable the next time, and then the next time, so on and so forth.
So let's say that somebody you've identified that somebody else is projecting their emotions onto you. So finally, we want to talk about what we do when we realize that someone's projecting their anxiety onto us. And on one side of things, it's like, do you point it out? Do you be like, I think you're having anxiety right now and it's nothing to do with me? And you could do that. You could. But if they're unaware of their anxiety, you probably just got an argument on your hand of you're anxious, no, I'm not, sort of situation.
Yeah. You could do that in a considered way with someone who you've already had those kinds of conversations with.
Yeah.
But yes, in most cases, that's not going to be true. So yes, carry on with the alternative.
Well, I think there's options. I think you could change the conversation.
Mm.
But I think the most important thing is actually to pause after the conversation, to take a moment, to go back to the conversation in your own head and just really pass that anxiety back to them and just identify what is theirs, what's their anxiety that's nothing to do with you.
Mm.
It's actually their concerns and fears that you're not buying into, and you've got to release that and let that go, that you don't have to carry that around. I think that's a really important thing to do after one of those conversations. And probably the sooner the better.
Yes, then it doesn't set in.
Yeah. I think also if I'm just thinking of situations where a family member might say something to a child, your child, if you're a parent, a grandparent or something, that it might be helpful afterwards to have a conversation with that child to help with that, because those sort of things can sometimes start establishing the way that we see the world, those sort of side comments.
So if there's enough of them when there's side comments,
start just challenging them, I think. And depending on the relationship, sometimes challenging it in the moment could be helpful. But again, like Michael was saying, I really do think it depends on the relationship, depends how much awareness the other person has and how you go about it. Like if you're just acknowledging, hey, I can see that you're really concerned about that. You said something as if it's fact, and that's still a prediction. It might happen, but it may not happen. Sometimes that, even though it's hard, those conversations, for me, sometimes I need to say it out loud in the moment to challenge it. Otherwise, oh, it's hard, because sometimes it feels like my brain, by not challenging it in the moment, it's like I agree to it. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're right. Whereas when I turn around and say, oh, I don't necessarily agree with that. Even if you go, oh, I hear what you're saying, but I don't agree and I'm going to do something differently.
I think that's made a bit more challenging by the dyslexia.
Yeah. And I think it helps, because I'm dyslexic. It helps to do it in the moment so that it doesn't solidify in my brain from that conversation.
And yeah, and that can be something that you might need to do right then, or like you were saying, for other people, doing it soon afterwards can be really helpful. I mean, I essentially go through an automatic process like that all the time, just unconsciously after sessions, because I, of course, have lots of people talking about anxiety all the time. But you might have noticed that I don't have a whole bunch of new anxieties every week.
Yeah, Michael, if you don't know Michael well, he is incredibly good at not taking all the stuff he hears and deals with at work, home. Like, you just are able to be fully present with your clients and really interested and engaged and helpful with them. And then the session's over and you're able to let it go. And I think that I've always been really impressed by that. I think it's why you're so good at what you do and you've got the stickability.
I mean, there is a key difference in that and what we're talking about here, right? And that they're not projecting it into my life, right? So when I'm joining them in that and empathizing with this way of seeing something, it's a situation in their life. It's not imagining it in my life with my kids or something. So that takes an extra little function of our own brain to then go, they're scared about this. I'm now going to apply it to my life and run a negative projection on that. So as long as you don't run that, then you're good to go.
And if you're struggling to do this yourself, that's when having someone who's very experienced in working with anxiety to work you through a challenge, if you've had a conversation that's been really hard, can be really helpful. I know talking to my own therapist, it was really helpful when I had conversations with family members that, you know, was really getting to me, to be able to challenge it with her and work through them was really, really helpful. So it's worth, especially if you're not able to easily detach from it, to get some support and some help. But that's our episode today on what to do about not taking on other people's fears. We have enough own anxiety to work on. If you listen to this podcast, I'm guessing that you're on the same boat. And so it's good to be able to detach from what is other people's and let them have their own and work through their own anxiety, so you can just focus on sorting out your own.
Thank you for listening to the Anxiety Specialist podcast. That's it for this week's episode. If you found this episode helpful, make sure to click the follow button and please do share this with your family and friends. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook or Instagram. That's at Anxiety Specialists. And if you're interested to learn how you can live an anxiety-free life, you can get our epic Anxiety Reducer Guide absolutely free, so you can get started right away on getting your anxiety back down. Just grab the link in the show notes. feel free to message us and let us know what you'd like to learn next. I am your host, Michael Burrows.
And I'm Becky Burrows.
And we're going to be back next week with more tips, strategies, and insights so you can get the anxiety-free life you deserve.